Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Want to grow your business fast? With TikTok ads, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising your business on TikTok, now is the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads, and grow your business fast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dottie along with Charlie Long. At 5:45, we'll have our Bet 365 triple option feature. Steve Geller will join us a little after 4:20 this afternoon. We'll have on with us David Grubb. We'll talk Pelicans and Joe Dumars. Basically, kind of first forte into the media here in New Orleans. And at 4:40, Evelyn Van Pelt, who is kind of runs things at the Rebel Walk, will be on with us to talk about, man, a host of Ole Miss players I don't, in my time of 40 years, don't ever remember this many guys from Ole Miss coming out one draft class. So we'll get Evelyn's take on that. Also want to tell everybody at 5:20, my old pal Rich Marty joins us, former Penn State star, played with the Saints 7 or 8 years, was a tremendous receiver, special teams guy. Rich don't miss a Penn State game. So I want his thoughts on Tyler Warren, the tight end from Penn State. But today, kind of grabs the headlines right off the bat. Joe Dumars, the executive vice president of basketball operations for the Pelicans, met the press, and this is his opening statement.
Happy to be home. Happy to be back in Louisiana. It's been a whirlwind journey for me. But before I get started, first of all, I want to just thank Mrs. Benson for this opportunity to actually be able to come back home and to do this, to take on this task. As Mrs. Benson said, we've spent quite a bit of time together and just talked about, main thing we talked about really is the culture of Louisiana, the fans, this organization, good people, surrounding yourself with the right people. And so I feel very confident taking on this role, primarily because of her and her insight and her approach to people and how you deal with people. I'll say this, and I say it with as much humility as possible, but there's just not a lot of places I would have left New York for. I enjoyed my job in New York. It was great. Loved it at the league office. All the people on the 20th floor that I work with in New York, all those people were great. I loved working with them. I wasn't looking to leave, but sometimes opportunities come along and you know, right place, right time, right people. And that's what happened here with the Pelicans, with Ms. Benson. So I really want to thank Ms. Benson for this opportunity to come home. The other thing I want to do is just say this, is that I've gotten to see a lot of stuff over the years throughout my NBA career, but there are certain things that are they're universal, I think. And I think you fill your building with like-minded good people. And I think you win with good people. And I often say this, just because you're a good person don't mean you're not a tough person. So you can be a good person and tough at the same time. And I don't stand here making a lot of proclamations about, you know, I'm pounding my fist and doing this, but we really want to hire good people here. We really want to bringing the right type of players here. We want people that are going to embrace New Orleans, they're going to embrace being in this city, in this state. If you don't know the fans of Louisiana, you may not get it. Like, in my house in Michigan, we got Saints stuff. Yeah. Like, we're diehard Saints fans in Michigan. We didn't grow up Detroit Lions fans. We're Saints fans. And so I think if you're from here, you understand what it is to be a fan of Louisiana. And I say that because I say, if I'm living in Michigan and LSU is playing, I didn't go to LSU, but I'm pulling for LSU. You know, I'm pulling for ULL. I'm pulling for Louisiana Tech. And that's just the way we are here as fans from Louisiana. And I love that about this. And so the team, the players, all of my colleagues that I'll be working with here, I truly believe in, like, you build a great culture where everyone feels great coming into the building every day. Win, lose, or draw, you feel great coming into the building. So I'll put a tremendous emphasis on culture, what the building is like, and then the basketball part. That's for myself and my staff to make sure we pick the right people, but the culture has to be right first. And so I'll put a heavy emphasis on that and try to build it the right way, and then we'll go from there. So I just wanted to open up and like I said, thank Mrs. Benson, thank all the people back in the NBA, thank Adam Silver, Mark Tatum. Those guys were incredible to work with for the last 3 years, but I'm super happy to be here and super happy to be home. So thank you so much, I appreciate it.
Just heard Joe Dumars at his introductory press conference, running the show here now with the Pelicans. And one of the things that's been brought up and certainly discussed on this show and on many other talk shows, not only locally but nationally, what will happen with Zion Williamson? And we've had a number of guests on to talk about it. If it's been David Grubb, who rejoined us back this week, Chuck Dodson, Jin Hale, you name it, we've had a bunch of them all give their opinion on what they think will happen or what they think should happen. Today, Joe Dumars addressed something that he heard said and written on social media.
None whatsoever. I read that last week. I had a mandate. And I was like, if I have, nobody's called me and told me that. Like, no, really, absolutely zero. When me and Mrs. Benson talked, she really just said what she said here. She said to me, she said, Joe, I would love to know what it feels like to win an NBA title. That was it. That was as close to an edict as you would get. And so I intend to do just that, what you just said, was like get to like know people first. Because I don't know the culture inside the building. I don't know the people. I know some of the people. I know Willie. I know someone's going to ask me about the coach and Willie. I've been knowing Willie forever. Great man. But Willie and I, we haven't even sat down and talked yet. Hopefully later on this evening if we can catch up and have time. But we haven't even had a chance to sit down and talk yet just because yesterday was my first day here. And so so I haven't even really had a chance to do that yet. I'm slowly starting to do it now and like talk to everyone, but no mandate. Zero.
That was Joe Dumars addressing the Zion Williamson question mark that's out there. I think listening to him, Charlie, I think if you were questioning if Willie Green was going to be back for next year, I think you got your answer.
You got your
coach is coming back.
Yeah. I mean, you got your answer with the fact that he was there too, Mike. He was in attendance at the introductory press conference for Joe Dumars. And as Joe kind of alluded to, he also had another answer where he talked about his relationship with Willie Green and how long they've been knowing each other. It's been quite some time that they've been connected. So, yes, for those that were wondering, what does Willie Green's future hold? It seems like he will be returning for the 2025-2026 season, the first year under lead executive Joe Dumars.
Yeah, he didn't tell you, but he told you. All you got to do is listen real good, and if Willie's there, if you're a coach and you figure that you ain't going to be here, you're not at the introductory press conference. The thing with Zion, I get too, Charlie, is I think that there is going to be a powwow where everybody sort of sits and talks. And I think first it'll be between Zion and Joe Dumars on exactly kind of what's your view? What do you want to do here? And I think from there, I think it could be a joint meeting with all of them. But I think what Joe Dumars is trying to tell you is, I want to sit down and hear from Zion. And he said in the press conference, I'm here to listen before I make an action.
So the stuff with Zion's fascinating, Mike, because he also mentioned that he's had very productive conversations with Zion since taking the job. And that was, they already knew each other because he worked for the league offices before taking the Pelicans' lead executive job. But since he's taken the job in New Orleans, that he's spoken with Zion, they've had good conversations, and you can expect that to kind of continue. But the thing, going back a little bit with Willie, Mike, before we hit the break here, you know, Rod Walker for The Advocate had a really good tweet about just the kind of hand that Willie was dealt this season. I know that a lot of people down here aren't big Willie Green fans, that they would have preferred for the Pelicans to move on with this new kind of just kind of clean house after moving on from Griff, also move on from Willie in the process. But just the amount of injuries that he had to overcome this season, he obviously wasn't able to do it. He just wasn't given a good hand this year. And so it's almost kind of like a mulligan that the Pelicans are giving him. At the same time, I told this with Scoot earlier on when I was on with his show, that when you're entering 2025 and 2026, you can imagine that there's going to be a lot of pressure on Willie Green to perform immediately.
Yeah, it's none of this wait till next year. You better do it now.
You got a mulligan, but I don't think you're going to
get another one. You ain't going to get another one.
Exactly.
We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 87. And David Grubb, who covers the NBA and the Pelicans, will join us right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped death at the hands of the Manson family? But what about the real-life brutal murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTay along with Charlotte Long. And on our Oakwood Hard Jewelers Talk and Text line, he covers the NBA and the Pelicans, David Grubb. Dave, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. And you got to hear Joe Dumars for the first time. And I think, even though he didn't say it, I can read between the lines. It looks as though Willie Green is going to be back as the head coach of the Pelicans. And that's something you sort of echoed last week with us.
Yeah, it looks like that decision has been made. You know, Willie was there in attendance. You know, most of the coaching staff was there, a couple of players as well. But it appears that Joe Dumars says he's going to evaluate the organization. One piece that's safe is Willie Green for the short term. Now, I think the question is, how long does that tenure last? Because I think, you know, you're worried that whenever you have new change and you have these things that desires to do something different, you know, you do kind of get rid of remnants of the past. And is that setting you up for eventually having to get rid of Willie down the road? I don't know. But, you know, from the start, just like anything is on the first day, everybody's happy. Everybody's getting along. Everybody wants to be in the picture. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, Dave, I think, you know, in any organization, no matter where you're at, if it's sports or in business, my thing is, if you haven't been successful, I don't want your non-success in my pocket, so to speak. Okay. And I might be pals with you, and I might be longtime pals with you, but I got pals of mine I don't want to be in business with. Okay. So I get what you're saying, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think this is going to be a short walk, but Willie's got to win, because nothing cures all the ills that you might have but winning.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have no further to look than across the street, you know, for the Saints when they look at, you know, when you look at the Saints. If Dennis Allen had won games, whether you liked him or not, he'd still be coaching the New Orleans Saints. And I think that's the case for Willie Green, is that now all of the things that we've talked about, whether people are good people or whether we like them, hey, that doesn't matter anymore. We're 4 years into this relationship. So all the fans care about, they don't care if Willie Green, you know, if you caught him on Bourbon Street every night of the week, if the Pelicans won 60 games and were in a chance to win a championship, I don't think they'd care, you know, if any of those things were transpiring. So right now it's just about winning and losing. And for Joe Dumars to come out and say, that he hasn't been given, you know, told by the organization who he has to keep and what moves he has to make. Okay, well, this is a Joe Dumars. Everything that goes on is on his ledger. And I think you're right. Ultimately, is you want the ledger to be as controlled as you can make it and not be hamstrung by other people's decisions.
Dave, one of the things is, and we can't have a clear, I guess, clear crystal ball on this, but let's take Zion out of the picture here. What moves do you see that Joe Dumars would try to make, or maybe with positions, I should say, on the court that he will try to upgrade in the offseason?
So I think the two things you're looking at immediately is you need to find a point guard, because DeJounte Murray isn't going to be around until at the very least January of next season, recovering from that Achilles injury. If he comes back faster, okay, but I still wouldn't be interested in rushing a guy back from an Achilles injury. So I think you have to find a solution, at least for the short term, at that spot. And then the other is you've got to get longer and more athletic in the front court. This team was terrible at interior defense. It was terrible at blocking shots. It was terrible at providing any kind of intimidation around the basket. Eve Misi was a willing competitor, but he's a young guy who needs to gain some weight. You need experience on along that back line, and you need length and athleticism. So I think those are the two areas immediately that need his attention.
Dave, Mike and I were talking about Willie in the first segment here of the hour, and just, you know, the bad hand that he was really dealt this year, where you saw some improvement in this first couple of years, and then this past season it falls off a cliff, but then you look at the amount of injuries that the Pelicans suffered throughout the season, and a lot of fans don't want to hear it. I see it all over social media. A lot of folks were really hoping that, you know, Phoenix would go pursue him and pick him up as their next head coach, and that he would leave New Orleans, regardless of being fired or not. And I want to get your thoughts on if he deserves the quote-unquote mulligan year that it feels like the Pelicans are giving him.
I don't think, you know, in sports, you don't get what you deserve. You get what you get. And I think winning and losing is the ultimate barometer of success. And in the NBA, coaches win earlier. They don't win at all. And we've talked about this. 11 of the last 13 coaches won their championships in their first four seasons. If that's the league that you're operating in, are the Pelicans close to winning a championship today? I'd say no. Even if they were completely healthy, are you putting them amongst the top four teams in the West? I don't think you would. So to me, I don't think that you know, Willie Green not earning another opportunity with the Pelicans is not the same as saying Willie Green is a bad coach. I just don't think for this the timetable that the Pelicans are on, if you're trying to win now, if that's the goal, and I think that as long as you have Zion Williamson, that's how you have to approach this. I don't know if Willie Green is the coach for you. My ultimate question would be, every coach should give you an advantage at something. Where do you see Willie Green's advantage for your organization right now? What do you have in him that's irreplaceable? And I don't think there's anything that makes him stand out in that regard. So I think, you know, I think I'd agree with fans if they said Willie Green hasn't earned another year here. Now, if they're going to do it, then that's the situation, and we just have to deal with it, and hopefully that Joe Dumars can provide them the tools to be more successful. But ultimately, if you were going to fire somebody, if you don't think they can win you a championship 2 years from now, then they can't win you a championship today. And I think that's the way you have to look at that decision.
Dave, I think, you know, we've all seen the college ranks, and you cover the college basketball ranks also, but, you know, and Cooper Flagg is who he is. But if you ended up with pick two or three, what kind of tell the fans, what would you be looking at with those early selections if you got the second pick or the third pick overall? And could you fill at least one of those two needs you brought up?
Yeah, I think you absolutely can. And I think that there are multiple players that even if you fell out of the top two, there are players that you could be happy with in this draft. So certainly Dylan Harper at that number two spot out of Rutgers, a big, athletic, strong, good decision-making guard, comes with NBA lineage. His dad, Ron Harper, obviously won championships with the Bulls and the Lakers. So he's got an NBA pedigree. And then you go down further. I think there are guys like Connor Knipple with Duke. If you fell down a little further, he gives you good decision-making on the perimeter, great size, shooting ability that you could work with. Certainly something that the Pelicans need. And in the front court, it's a little bit more dangerous, I think, to find a front court player. They take a little more time to mature. But I think that those perimeter players, I think, you know, at Duke, Trey Johnson, another guy who could come in and have an immediate impact. for the New Orleans Pelicans. DJ Edgecombe out of Baylor is another player that could have an immediate impact. And there are others as well. Point guard, and his name is slipping my mind, out of Illinois, I think could be another player, again, that you cultivate long-term to take on that point guard role as you phase out DeJounte Murray either in the short term or you trade him immediately. So I think if there are players, I don't think losing out on the number one pick is a disaster for the Pelicans as it could be in another year in the draft. I think there are very competent players in this top 10.
No, and I agree 1,000%, David. And it feels like, you know, last year the Pelicans found a good player and Yves Mesia had picked 21 in a bad draft. But this is a good draft. And so the Pelicans with the fourth best lottery odds, they're in a good position here where, yes, if you don't get Cooper Flagg, you know, it stings a little bit because of the season that you just went through. But there's like five other teams that are saying the exact same thing. And so outside of that, there's a little bit of a drop-off to Harper and then maybe another drop-off. It's kind of tiered with like Edgecombe and Bailey. But then other guys like Derek Queen from Maryland or Kamen Malawach from Duke as well. There's some good prospects basically in the top seven or eight-ish picks. So it's not the end of the world if the Pelicans really fall out of those top two, as you mentioned with Flagg and Harper. They're going to get a stud, it feels like, at the top of this draft because it's such a good draft.
Yeah, I think obviously there are people who look at Joe Dumars and say, oh, he's had top five picks and messed them up. And I'll think about Darko Milicic, but I think – you know, that was, again, a team drafting for need rather than taking the best player available at that time. And now there's less of a desire to do that where we are with players. Everybody's taking the best potential possible on the board, and there are a lot of good potential players. I think the most important thing going into the draft for the Pelicans is deciding what direction that they're going to go in. If you are in a rebuild, tell people early. Get on that program, make the trades you need to make to get into a rebuild and start building around that player if you do get a Cooper Flagg or a Dylan Harper. Okay, let's rebuild around this young man. If you're going to try to be a champion and you finish in the top five and you get a pick there, then find that player who's going to fit in and help bolster your team immediately. And then I think that there are also plenty of deals to be made. You can move on from a C.J. McCollum now as a veteran going into his last year of his contract, who certainly doesn't want to be a part of any rebuilds at age 35. That's not in his best interest. So I think you start moving on from those types of players and filling out this roster. It can be done. I don't want people to think that things are dour and sad for the Pelicans. It's just that they're really hard, and hard decisions have to be made.
David, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Man, I always enjoy when you're on. And one more thing before you leave. Boy, was Kawhi something last night, wasn't he?
Ooh-wee. Oh, turn back the clock.
Man.
I mean,
Kawhi Leonard.
Basketball players.
Ooh,
my goodness.
Man.
His ability to dominate at all three levels, get to the bucket, shoot the mid-range, shoot the three, and defend. When he's healthy, how many players terrorize the league as well as Kawhi Leonard?
Mm. Well, that list is real short, Dave. I can tell you, real short. David, thanks so much for joining us, buddy. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
All righty. David Grubb, who covers the NBA and the Pelicans, and Kawhi Leonard put on a performance last night that I couldn't take the TV off. I knew the Clippers were going to win this game, but I just continued to watch it and to see him hit shot after shot after shot.
And
I'm like, good
shots,
gracious.
Mike, he's taking like a contested three with two guys in his face. Like, they were throwing doubles at him the whole time, and he kept making them. I'll talk about Kawhi, I think, for triple option today. That was an unbelievable performance last night.
Yeah, he was like a dude on the side of the beach trying to hit the ocean. Everything fell in. Everything fell in. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870. We have Evelyn Van Pelt on from the Rebel Walk to talk to us about that big list of Ole Miss players coming out for the 2025 NFL Draft right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTay along with Charlie Long. And on our Oakwood Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, covers the Ole Miss Rebels for the Rebel Walk, Evelyn Van Pelt. Evie, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon. How you doing today?
I'm doing great, and I'm just so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Eve, one of the things, I think I went back, and I know I wrote it to you. You got to go back, I think, to 1963 or 64 when the Rebels have had this many players that are projected to go in the top 100. It's a special year, and, you know, some of them you got to know very well in covering the Rebels day-to-day and on a weekly basis. But, you know, there's so much talk now about Jackson Dart, so – I think everybody's going to have a different opinion on him as a player. But your interaction with Jackson, the person, because here's a guy that, you know, he's from California, so to speak. You know, and he comes here, and you know, it's different in the South. But and you saw his maturity as the years went on, like anybody who's 18, 19, 20 years old. We all mature at a different rate. But in your interaction with Jackson of handling the pressure of being a starting quarterback, not only on an SEC team, but on a team coached by Lane Kiffin.
Really good question. I tell you what, I feel like I had a front row seat for the growth of Jackson Dart. You're right, his on-field growth is documented, and different people have different opinions about his NFL potential and where he'll go. But just as a person and a leader, I got to tell you, he was impressive as a leader. And that really kind of surprised me. It's not a knock on him, but you're right. He kind of came in from the West Coast, a USC transfer, dropped into Oxford, Mississippi. and I tell you, I believe I saw kind of the beginning of the transformation of him the year before his senior year against Tulane. And they were actually, the Rebels were behind in the second half. And Jackson just seemed to pick the team literally up and put him on his back and carry him and, you know, hurdle people and, you know, whatever he needed to do. And after the game, he talked about that and just, it was all of a sudden he was very expressive about the team and how much the team meant to him. And then you fast forward to, you know, a lot of those guys. I mean, Dart, Jared Ivey, J.J. Pegues, Princely Amamiel, and a lot of those guys, Caden Prescorn, chose to come back for their final year and play. And Lane Kiffin has credited that to Jackson Dart. You know, he led those guys, and they all wanted to come back together, which was very, very unusual.
The thing with Jackson, I think he's harder on himself than any fan could be. I can see it in his eyes and how he talks after a good game or a bad game. When they put that mic in front of him in a good game, he doesn't want to talk about what went right. He'll give you what went wrong. And my thing is, that is the mark of a guy who's driven because of the fact he don't like losing and he don't like making mistakes out on the field. It's part of playing sports that's going to happen. But I think, Evie, I think he's a lot harder on himself than any media or any social media person could ever be on him.
Yes, and you know, you probably saw that if you recall after Ole Miss went into Tiger Stadium and lost this last season. And that really, really, really kind of at the time put a damper on, you know, all the playoff talk. And he was the player that came in and talked afterwards. And I mean, I will never forget it. I just wanted, as a mom, I just wanted to give him a hug. But he sat there and, you know, he had a hoodie on. But he faced everybody. And he talked about his shortcomings. He didn't blame anybody else. He took responsibility and said, it's on me. You know, this is my fault. And it's kind of like you're saying, I will get better. I will do better. And after, you're right, even after a win, that's what he would do. And it reminded me a lot of like what I saw from Eli Manning, you know, when he was there. I mean, you have a win, but yet you're still thinking about what you left on the table, so to speak, what else we could have done and how we could have scored.
One of the guys I got to see in high school, he was at Como High School in Louisiana. He played quarterback. He was an option quarterback there.
Yeah.
And I got a couple calls from coaches at that time at Louisiana Tech that said, what do you think? I said, listen, don't put him as a defensive back. I'm going to tell you right now, he got to touch the ball some kind of way. If you put him at halfback or wide receiver, whatever. And he made the conversion to wide receiver, had 2 years at Tech where I think he learned how to play wide receiver. And I remember speaking to him before he transferred to Ole Miss, and he told me, I want to go somewhere where they throw the football a lot. And he told me, one of the teams I'm looking at is Ole Miss. I said, well, Trey, I'm going to be honest with you. You won't find too many places they don't throw it anymore than Ole Miss does. And he kind of gave me a little grin about it. But you also see the maturity in Trey making the position change from quarterback to wide receiver. leaving Tech, going to Ole Miss. He came back because he really thought this was the year. And then what happens? Bang, he gets hurt right off the bat. And he didn't have the senior year like he wanted to. And he's not the fastest guy, but he is quick. And he's got some length on him to put those arms out and make a catch in between defenders. That's really impressive. And that's why I don't think he's getting out of round two.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think, you know, even hurt, Trey Harris had, you know, over 1,000 yards, 1,030 yards and 7 touchdowns. And he hardly, you know, I mean, and he missed a lot of games. He looked healthy at the combine. He looked great at pro day. Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think he gets out of the second round either. And golly, I mean, if he is on a team that has like traditional X receivers and aren't afraid to give their wideouts chances on 50-50 balls, I mean, he's your guy. I think he could develop into a legitimate wide receiver too by year two. Great guy, too. I mean, one of the nicest guys. I mean, you know him. One of the nicest guys you could meet. Just really, really happy and excited to see where he goes.
Evie, you had him for 1 year after transferring from Alabama. But before he transferred to Alabama, cool. He was at my alma mater, UL, Raging Cajun. Yes. Trey Amos, who Mike has projected as a second-round pick. I wanted to get your evaluation of him, how he played this year in Oxford, and what you see from him.
Man, I tell you what, I think everybody in Oxford wishes they could have Trey Amos another year because he brought skills and he brought an intelligence to the game. You know, he came after he left your school, then he went to Alabama and spent a season there and then came to Ole Miss. And I mean, I think he's got genuine NFL starter traits. He's versatile. I just think he has speed, processing speed and athletic traits where he's going to really develop in this area. And so I think, you know, and he's just from talking to him, I mean, he is the kind of corner who takes it personally when a receiver catches, you know, a ball. So,
and Evie's got some athletic arrogance about him.
Yes,
and listen,
yes,
that's not a bad
good.
Thing. It's
no,
not a bad not, thing.
Not to be a cornerback in the NFL. I mean, I think you got to have that attitude. So really, really, really looking forward to him, too. He was the Class 2A state champion in the long jump.
Yes, he was.
So he's, you know, very explosive, and you can see that in his play.
Evie, the first time I saw him, it wasn't on the football field. I covered the state track meet. That's the first time I saw Trey Amos.
Really?
I'll be honest.
Really?
It was not
That's
on a football
amazing.
Field. It was not on a football field. It was on the track. Well, he was on a field all right, but it wasn't a football field. He wasn't getting hit, or he wasn't hitting anybody. You only had him for 1 year at Ole Miss, but Walter Nolan, he's the buzz guy. I've had, you know, a lot of people tell me he's in their top 20. They think he'll go anywhere from, say, like 14 to 22 in round one. The Walter Nolan I saw last year at Ole Miss, he tilted the field. He was a badass player on the field. The one at A&M, every once in a while you would see him kind of hit that dial and move it. Last year, I know when he played LSU, those coaches and players along that offensive line was, man, he was in the backfield more than Nussmeier. You know, they had a difficult time blocking Walter Nolan. So from what you got to kind of interact with Walter, and he was the man, number one recruit in the country, coming there, a lot of expectations, and certainly with the NIL, there's a lot of pressure put on you to perform. One thing with Walter Nolan, he performed last year.
Boy, he did. He created so much havoc up there up front. And as you said, I mean, LSU coaches weren't alone in trying to figure out what to do with Walter. I mean, he was the anchor of that Ole Miss defense. And last season they set school records of 52 sacks, 120 tackles for loss. He was just, I mean, a constant disruptor, you're right, in the backfield. And he could. He showed an ability to take over games. And what I thought was interesting is, you know, I mean, I full disclosure, I went to A&M. Walter started out at A&M. Okay. And he you're right. I mean, he was obviously a phenomenal player, number one recruit. But you didn't see from him what you saw once he got into Pete Golding and defensive line coach Randall Joyner's system. And part of it was, you know, I also heard, and this was not true, but you heard, you know, Aggies would say, well, you know, he was a bit of a diva, or he was absolutely nothing could have been farther from the truth at Ole Miss. I mean, he was a team player, you know, worked hard consistently, didn't take plays off, which I saw that from some of those players in the A&M defenses at that time, Jimbo defenses. And so really, really, really proud of Walter for how he came in, because you're right. I mean, I didn't even really think about it that way, but pressure, number one recruit, number one transfer, and he absolutely delivered.
One of the things I wish we had time to talk about, but man, the personality of J.J. Fagiz. Oh, my God. He came to one of our camps, and I see him. He's like 288 pounds. Yeah. So I asked him, I said, J.J., so what you play? And he was like, well, coach, I think they'll put me at fullback or running back. I'm like, what? Fullback and running back? He said, yeah, I think I'll play a little tight end too. And I'm like, whoa, dude, did anybody, when they recruited you, weigh you? Because I knew he was close to 290. And then when I looked it up, I saw you weighed 288, and I was like, oh, goodness. But he is quite the personality.
He really is, and he's a sweet guy. When the Ole Miss all-girl cheer team won the national title in January, nobody knows this, but J.J. had a banner made and placed in the square in Oxford and took them out and treated them all to dinner. So he's a super, super guy, Chucky Mullins Award winner, so just a fantastic guy, in addition to being a very big potential tight end defensive lineman and running back.
Evelyn, thanks so much for joining us. Always great to have you join us, and we appreciate your time and all your insights.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a great rest of your week.
All right. Evelyn Van Pelt, Evie from the Rebel Walk. You can read all her insights. I know we got a lot of Ole Miss fans in the area. We'll be back to finish it up here in hour number one on Sports Talk right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this news break.